I'm Anthony Bachman from All Things Good and Nerdy, a geeky podcast part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other fantastic geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
And then there were five. We need to go back before the monarchy goes anarchy. Squad, save the queen.
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper. We call it the Starling Tribune. I'm your chief editor tonight. My name is SP, and your other award-winning reporters and friends of mine for this episode number 229 of the Starling Tribune are Chris.
Never thought I'd get to meet the Queen.
Are you sure it was the Queen?
Perhaps.
Yeah. And Michelle.
The adventure is in the details.
It's always in the details when you're talking money. Money, money, money. Nate's the money man. This podcast is recorded on Thursday, February 21st, 2019, live on www.geeks.live.
That's right, SP. And this evening, we'll be discussing Legends of Tomorrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the past week that could, and let's be honest, probably will impact future episodes of Legends of Tomorrow, as well as the shows in the greater universe. That includes The Flash, Supergirl, Vixen, Constantine, and of course, Arrow.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. After the show, you can check out our content at GunnaGeek.com, where you can also find other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles.
Thanks, guys. Hey, Michelle, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody what we were supposed to watch this week?
This is Legends episode called Dancing Queen. It's season 4, episode 3. It aired Monday, November 4th, 2018. It's directed by Kristen Wendell. Credits include 2 Blind Spot, 1 Magnum PI, the new one, 3 Arrow, and 1 Legends. Written by James Egan. Credits include 6 Legends, 3 Hellcats, and 2 Ash vs. Evil Dead. And Morgan Faust. Credits include 5 episodes of Legends.
Woohoo! What a great team. I saw their names again and went, hey, some of those names are definitely familiar to us. James Egan, 6 episodes of Legends, and Morgan Faust, 5 episodes of Legends. Well, back in November of 2018, when this episode aired, there was a total of 3 of the CW DC comic book shows that aired. It started on Sunday, the 4th of November, with Supergirl airing their 4th episode of the 4th season, Michelle, help me out. I have no idea what that title is.
Ahizma.
To a total rating of, and this is the Live Plus 7-day DVR numbers, to a rating of 2.20/2. Yay! On Monday, the 5th of November, Arrow aired their 4th episode of the 7th season, Level 2. You guys remember Level 2?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I definitely do. To a total rating of 1.98. And following Arrow on Monday, the 5th of November, Legends of Tomorrow aired this episode, which is the 3rd episode of the 4th season, called Dancing Queen, to a total rating of 1.79. Awesome ratings with the Live Plus 7-day DVR. Dancing Queen is the title of the episode, and we equate the title to the theme, and we start talking about the episode from there. So, Michelle, why don't you start us off?
Well, I have 2. First off, Dancing Queen is a famous ABBA song. ABBA was a huge disco band. And last season, the team posed as a disco group in an adventure we never saw. It actually was the start of the time loop episode with Zari. And of course, this episode begins with the quote-unquote Queen of England taking her crown jewels to a bar and dancing the night away.
We have to call it a bar. There's a reason why, but we're going to call it a bar.
Or a pub. Either way.
Well, either way, bar. Oh my gosh, I'm tongue twisted tonight. Blah, blah, blah. Pub or bar. Either way, it works because we're going to talk about why in a bit. Chris, you're a big ABBA fan.
Oh, I'm the biggest ABBA fan, so much that I only know one of their songs.
Which one was it?
Dancing Queen, because I've heard it at tailgates before. That's about it.
Were you dancing to Dancing Queen?
Well, Depending on how long I'd been tailgating, it's entirely possible.
Do you wear bell bottoms when you're dancing to Dancing Queen?
Dude, I wear bell bottoms every day.
Every day, that's the correct answer.
It's coming back. I'm bringing it back.
Yeah. So this band is called The Smell. I guess it kind of works, I guess, for a punk rock band, The Smell.
It's 1970s London. Of course it works.
Exactly.
I mean, calling themselves The Smell. Constantine was in a band called Mucus Membrane. This is, you know, anarchy in the UK movement, punk movement. Big mohawks, spiky mohawks, different collars, piercings. They really got this era down right.
Good to know. And we know just about when Constantine was born based on all this, too.
Yeah. He found out the hard way that you can't just kill your dad or beat up your dad. It was really funny. Yeah, he was trying to basically erase himself out of existence. And he hit like this invisible wall and he kept getting bounced back. He kept getting bounced back. And Zari's like, look, it's a paradox. You have to be born. You have to be born to hit your dad. And if you hit your dad and you can't be born, then this is time travel 101, man.
And it was absolutely hilarious, too.
He wasn't just trying to hit his dad. He was trying to, quote, give his dad a back alley vasectomy, unquote, is what he was trying to do. And he just couldn't do it. He couldn't enable the vasectomy because then he wouldn't be born. I guess we need to talk about the timeline here. And I know we don't always go in depth about time travel because, well, it's hard to do that on this show. It's hard to do it on Doctor Who. It's all about time travel. But apparently there's an invisible wall that comes up that throws you away when you're trying to do something to not get born.
Well, it would make sense. Because if you're not born, then you can't do these things.
I'm just having problems. Like, he gets to the moment of contact and then he magically appears, you know, like he's been pushed down away. So I guess it makes sense, but is that how the time stream actually reacts?
Well, that's their interpretation of it. I mean, we've seen various different interpretations throughout sci-fi. I mean, it could have been that he actually landed the shot, and then you see him start to gradually fade away if you were talking like potentially Star Trek time travel rules. This is just how the Legends writer's room has decided to portray time travel and the limits of being a future self going in the past, destroying your past somehow. You can't do it.
Yeah, and this idea of Constantine wanting to change his past comes back. Yeah, as he says, his past is haunting him. There's something after him. This is very true. If you haven't seen the mid-season finale, I mean, we will eventually talk about it, but his drive to change his past gives us one of the best episodes of Legends ever. Puppets singing. It's great. I don't want to spoil anything in case anyone hasn't seen it yet.
In case they're listening along to our actual podcast before they watch the next episode. Okay, so it's 1977 London, and I think they pulled off the era pretty well. The Queen, okay, I mean, it's believable for us Americans. I don't know if it'd be believable if you were a Brit. But that is not the only place and time that they go in time travel.
Well, they spend like 3 minutes. Well, not they, Nate and Gary. Nate has decided to still do his office job, and he's learning that you can't just go anywhere at any time when it comes to the Time Bureau. I mean, like, ooh, they have Taco Monday instead of Taco Tuesday. Like, ooh, how thrilling.
Hey, tacos are awesome. Don't dog the tacos.
Tacos are great, but having them on Monday, I mean, have them on Sunday, you know, have them whenever. But I like how Nate talked Gary into, like, hey, you can be my time bro. Gary was like, hey, you know, I'm only down to one nipple. But Nate was still like, it'll be fun. Go ahead. And I guess in all those reams of paper and all those manuals, Gary skipped the don't take something from the time period.
Yeah, it sure seems that way because that was a mistake.
I don't think he had time to take anything. I think this plant actually transported itself through the gate when they weren't actually watching it, or whatever they call it. What is it called? A window? A gate? I have no idea.
Well, they went there because there was a magical blip. And then he gave Nate the plant. And he's like, where'd you get this? And he went, I got it from our first thing. He actually picked it up because when they came back in through their little gate, Gary was all like, hey, whatever we did, it fixed everything because there's no blip anymore. Well, he fixed it by taking the souvenir and giving it to Nate. And we had our own little, like, little shop of horrors moment.
Right. I guess I assumed that the plant actually walked into the gate when they weren't watching. And he saw it laying around. He planted it. He potted it, I guess is the correct term, gardening term. And then he gave it to Nate. But I guess you're right. How could that have happened? And he said, I got something from our first mission together. Yeah, okay. Put it in his pocket, I guess.
Something. I can't believe that Ava wouldn't have made that like lesson one.
Yeah, I can't believe they didn't get in trouble for it when it's all said and done.
So this brings up a good point. So the Time Bureau, they don't have a contamination room as they go through their time window.
Neither do the Legends.
Well, they kind of have the airlock, I guess, that can work as a contamination room.
Yeah, we don't know what Gideon does, like if she sterilizes them or something as they go through the airlock. We don't know all of Gideon's tricks and stuff.
Just a blast of radiation as you walk in the door.
Yeah, because that's what I want every time I come home, to get blasted with radiation.
It also doubles as a birth control method by making you sterile.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all Constantine had to do, is get his dad to board the ship.
Exactly. Problem solved, had Constantine's father come on board the ship.
I'm sure Gideon would not have allowed that.
No, so she can turn on and off the radiation depending on her will.
It's Gideon. I believe we've established that Gideon can do stuff on her own.
Okay, so if you extrapolate that, then she could be responsible for the plague that gets transported from one era to the next.
But she takes care of that. We're postulating that she's taking care of that.
We are so deep down the rabbit hole.
What if Constantine's dad has a plague on him?
Then when he gets back on the ship, she would have taken care of that.
And sterilize him in the process.
Well, we have never seen their laundry machines.
No, we have.
We've seen the tops of them. We don't know exactly what all those, you know, her laundry machines do. Maybe it kills ancient bacteria and viruses and such.
Ancient periodontal secret. Although that's dishwasher stuff, right?
My head hurts so much right now.
Anyway, this episode was a lot about Rey. We had Rory go, haircuts never broken a rule. And of course, Ari is rolling her eyes, like giving him a look. So Chris, on a scale of, I mean, how awkward did you find Rey when he tried to be Rage? I'm trying to figure out what level of awkwardness.
Oh, it's high up there, but that's part of why they had Rey in that position, so you could play off the comedic effect of straight-laced Rey Palmer, who's never really done a bad thing in his life other than, you know, letting Nora go, which nobody knows about. But Zari has to try and act like he's this bad boy punk rebel. And I kind of enjoyed him eventually kind of loosening up and being a punk a little bit, kind of just letting the rules go and then having to come back to it. So on the awkwardness scale, if we had to do it on a scale of 1 to 10, I don't know, like an 8.5, 9.
SP, how would you rate Ray's awkward level?
He plays the Boy Scout pretty well, but he's been around the block too. I think he just likes playing the nerd, the dweeb, the Boy Scout. You know, you take a pick of what you want to call him. I mean, he's got a corgi tattoo now, so I don't think he's totally lost, even though Rory thinks he's totally lost. Okay, rate him, his awkwardness. It's actually pretty high up. I mean, if I met a guy like that, I wouldn't consider him to be Rage, that's for sure. So awkwardness, I give it an 8.
But he has a way of just endearing himself with the smell. I love how the guy is pretending to be Irish because Constantine just immediately sees, oh, that must be a leprechaun. Easy peasy. Rey dumps the rice, and the guy realizes it's a leprechaun test, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, that was hilarious. Like, oh, I'm a, and he wasn't even, he's not Irish. He's just a ginger, which I don't. know if that's a derogatory term or not, so my apologies if that's a derogatory term, but I guess that's what they call him on the show. He's a ginger. A red-headed person, I guess, is called a ginger, and he was playing a ginger from Ireland. And there's a lot of fair-skinned, fair-haired people in Ireland, because guess what? It's way up there in latitudes, kind of cold, kind of cloudy. And there was a potato famine. And my ancestors came over to America from Ireland because of the potato famine. So yes, I'm 75% Irish. And I guess I should watch out if somebody spills rice in front of me.
Let's find out. Someone spills some rice in front of SP.
I do know that I come from a family of hobbits because, Chris, you've met me in person. And Michelle, you've met me in person too. Actually, all three of us have met in person in the same place. So, you know how tall Chris is compared to me, Michelle?
Very. Chris is a mountain man.
Okay. I'm a mountain man to my family. I went to a family reunion once, and this is when, I don't know, I'm 35, so, and I'm looking around going, I'm the tallest person here by a lot.
But isn't it a great feeling?
You're my height.
Exactly. So that's my point, is I might be coming from, I've always considered myself coming from a family of hobbits, but maybe I come from a family of leprechauns.
Ah. Mm. And by the way, redheaded people do not like to be called gingers.
Okay. My apologies to redheaded people. I'm sorry.
I do love it when Sarah and Rory are on the ship and Ray has to steal a corgi that belongs to the queen. And they look at each other like, who's going to be the quarterback? Who's going to be this? And I love how Mick's just like talking to Ray about what to do. But what's actually happening is what, SP? What's actually happening when Ray's sitting on that bench?
Ray is talking to Rory and trying to be like the spy back. Oh, I'm sorry. The wrong bench. So there was two bench sitting scenes in this episode. Okay. So yes, he's sitting on the bench and he's watching the corgis, and Sarah is going after all the guards, the Queen's guards, Secret Service, whatever, MI6, MI5, whatever they are, no idea. And Sarah's taking them out because she's a trained assassin and she can take these people out. I believe this. Sarah, and I've watched Sarah train. She could probably do it in real life too. Anyway, so she's taking them out. And then Ray gets up and he's told to go over and just ask for the corgi. And he did. And he was given the corgi. So I don't know why all of a sudden that he's a criminal or a fugitive, because he asked and it was given to him. So I don't understand the law here. It was voluntary. It wasn't his fault. He could have just been walking around and wanting to pet the corgi. And the guy gave him the corgi.
There was an implication of violence because behind him is Sarah holding up two unconscious bodyguards behind Ray.
But the dog handler didn't know that they were together.
The implication was that he thought that she was going to beat him down. So I'd give up the dog too.
Oh, is that all it takes? Is a couple of unconscious guys being held up by an assassin?
It's not my dog, so yeah. My dog, maybe not, because I like him. Corgis are a little energetic for me.
Oh, I see. So you're anti-corgi.
Unless it's Cheddar. Cheddar's okay. Sorry, it's Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh.
Reference.
Which is lost on me because I don't watch it.
Cheddar has his own Instagram. Anyway. Anyway, so yes. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is wonderful. Anyway, this is the episode where we get the shapeshifter named Charlie. And we were always wondering how we were going to bring Maisie back. And this is a very interesting way of bringing in a character who gets to be played by a former cast member. And it was something about how, you know, like Amaya was our moral compass and she's gone and we've been a little lost without her. Do you really think Amaya was their moral compass?
No. This is the woman that was willing to destroy the past to save our family before they decided to break time. That's not your moral compass.
I didn't buy it either, but I think they were just trying to plant a seed in the viewer's head that we missed her and she can be brought back, or a version of her was brought back. I think that's what they were trying to do, and maybe it was weak writing. I don't like to call out the writers, but maybe that line was kind of a weak line.
How do you feel about them introducing Charlie? I like Charlie. Do you like Charlie at all? Because I thought she made some interesting points. You know, Mick Roy at the beginning was like, we need to find the magic creature. We need to get rid of it. That's it. And then Ray was, maybe we should give her a chance. So again, he's the Boy Scout and he's the softie and everything. And Charlie is like, you know, I've been imprisoned because people don't understand. They're afraid of what I can do. What did you think of her, SP?
I liked her. I liked her a lot. Matter of fact, I would have been fine if she didn't use Amaya's visage. I think that was almost a cheap trick to bring the actor back and become a regular again. Well, we know it is a cheap trick to do that. And so because plot, I have nothing against the actor, by the way. I did like the actor that played the original Charlie, or at least the, what was it, the toothpaste ad Charlie. I did like that. And I would have been fine taking that forward. But I think because that version of Charlie became so endearing to us during the episode, they had to switch it up to something else to make it really abrasive to us. Because the Charlie in the next few episodes, not to spoil anything, you see it at the end of this episode, she is her own rage, right? She's in prison. She doesn't want to be in prison. They have taken away her ability to shape shift, and she has a little vendetta against everybody, and she just wants to escape, especially because she knows that all they really wanted to do was send her to hell, like everybody else that they've been doing for magical creatures, including that fairy godmother that we saw. So I get it from that standpoint, I guess. It's a very, very subtle way to do it. Endear us to the character and then switch the character's visage to denote a real radical change in behavior. But I kind of like the original Charlie, and I hope we get her back eventually too. There's always a possibility that she can regain her shape-shifting eventually.
Yeah, I imagine that will come into play at some point in the back half of the season. But like you said, it was an easy, cheap trick to bring back the actor that they like from last season who played Amaya in another role. That's fine. It's fine to do that. But I feel like you're almost giving the Charlie character disservice by putting someone else's face on it. Maybe that's what they're going for, is to have that issue that the Legends are going to have, which is that she looks like Amaya. She sounds sort of like Amaya, but she's not Amaya. And they have to get around that. And had she truly been their moral center, their moral core, maybe this hits harder. But I didn't buy that line. And maybe that's why I kind of sit here at the end scratching my head going, I don't understand why you trap her in that form.
As Neil would say, because plot.
I mean, that's fair.
But at least it was a fun episode to bring her back. I like this episode. I love how we have our first, well, technically, it was a pub, so it's a pub fight.
I'll go with a bar fight, but you're fine. We'll go pub fight.
Because Constantine and Rory, surprise, surprise, are not getting along. And Constantine lights Rory's shoe on fire when they're in the pub. And Rory just like slams his head and everyone's like, fight. And we have a pub fight.
Pub brawls are the best. And it was a pretty good fight. It was all crazy and nutso. I loved it.
It's not a season of Legends unless there's some sort of bar fight.
Exactly. This is their shtick. So it just makes sense that they would go with that again, because it's kind of the joke now of when are they going to start their next bar fight?
It's not really a season. It's like an episode. It's not like an episode of Legends of Tomorrow without a bar fight.
Well, they don't have a bar fight every episode.
Yeah, there you go. So it's not an episode.
No, every season there has to be a bar fight somewhere in that season. Just like Brooklyn Nine-Nine has their Halloween thing, Legends of Tomorrow has their bar fight thing.
What was it with that school thing that it was the paintball episode every year? Was that it?
Community.
Community, yep.
Yeah, Community's paintball episode.
See, there you go. Anything else you want to talk about, SP?
Ava and Sarah are very happy in this episode together. I'll give the writers that they have continued their relationship on an even keel. And I think that's great for both characters as they go forward. I mean, it was a crux starting off the season. It was getting together last season. So I'm glad that they're continuing it without throwing it in our face every episode. They're just happy together and they're spending time together. I like that.
Chris, anything?
I feel bad that Gary and Mona can't keep their awkward flirtation going on anymore since he flashy thinged her. Makes me sad.
I think we're going to get more of that. And okay, guys, we need to talk about this because it's going to bug me. I'm a rocket scientist. So Time Bureau, the out in the open, non-top secret version that Gary gives, was that they are the keepers of the time zones on Earth. And then Mona comes up with this great idea, instead of going up and down on the globe, go side to side. That is a terrible idea. That would mean it would be 6 a.m. in New York when everybody's getting ready to go. And it's 6 a.m. at like midnight. I know it's 3 a.m., but at midnight in L.A. That's just a terrible idea.
Yeah, that would be miserable.
I have to admit, the Time Bureau has a S.H.I.E.L.D. problem. There's that joke that in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., S.H.I.E.L.D. puts their logo on everything, hats, mugs, cars. And here you have the Time Bureau, which is supposed to be ultra secret. And they don't have like a little fake lounge area where they can take deliveries. She actually comes into the building and sees the logo. I mean, I know tacos are great, but come on.
In the Time Bureau's defense, the logo wasn't meant to be shown to her. It was just on the back of a clipboard that Gary shouldn't have had in the lobby. That's how she saw the logo.
But it didn't seem like it was even just the lobby. It's like they stepped out of their conference room in the greater office complex and she was in there. And I was sitting there going, man, if you're a secret government agency, I'm not sure you let the gal deliver in your lunch. Come in. You would drop them off at the security desk or something.
Yeah, she actually sees everything on the wall and such. She's among the cubicles here.
It's poor operational security from the Time Bureau here.
First, Gary's bringing stuff back from the past, and they're letting the cute girl. I know she's cute and she's great, and we'll see her again. But again, tacos are great, and sandwiches. You also get sandwiches this way, but go to the lobby. Meet her there.
Exactly.
You know who she reminds me of? Arrow Season 1 Felicity.
Oh, don't insult Mona like that.
No, I'm not insulted. Season 1 Felicity was awesome.
Yes.
I am trying to compliment Mona. She just reminds me of that.
Okay, I guess probably because I've seen future episodes and such with Mona. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, I've watched up and everything.
I'm current, too. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Season 1 Felicity was, I don't know. She was cute and red pen and very awkward. But Mona's a little bit more, I don't know.
A better version of Season 1 Felicity, maybe?
Yes.
Okay.
There we go. A better written version of Season 1 Felicity. How's that?
I'll buy it.
Sari's got a nice new watch, courtesy of Ray. Ray really knows how to make watches.
Yeah, he's good with the smart tech, it seems like.
Accurate time in any time period. And, of course, it has her totem, because last episode, she lost her necklace, so now she has a totem and a watch.
I wonder if it has that 3D communication protocol that you kind of see in Star Wars. You know, people just putting up their wrists and having a 3D thing. I wonder if the watch has that on it, too.
I don't know, but it's pretty comparable to some of the Stark tech we've seen in the Marvel side of things, where they can project stuff off of things, so maybe?
Stark tech!
For those listening on audio, SP's wearing a Iron Man geeky jersey, so he has an arc reactor in the center of his chest. It's pretty awesome.
There is a reason I chose the Stark jersey tonight, but we won't get into that.
When he does things like this, it just makes me miss Palmer tech.
They even reference the fact that he was CEO of Palmer. I'm like, man, he has fallen, because he used to be the CEO of this Apple-like company, and now he's just a legend, you know, part of the five legends running around on the ship. That's part of me. On the other hand, I think of him a little bit like Korg in Korg Industries. That guy can go off and do whatever he wants to on their own, like the legends. And yeah, I kind of like that version of Korg, or Ray as Korg in this.
Any final thoughts, Chris?
This was a fun one. I like it when they play around in the past and do lots of set pieces, make everyone look like products of that era. And seeing them running around into the pub in their 70s era gear was quite entertaining to me.
SP?
God save the Queen.
Well, this was a fun episode. And next week's episode, Wet Hot American Bummer, it's season 4, episode 5, which, by the way, still available on the website or the app. If you're like, I don't know how to watch, now you don't have to pay for anything. You can just go to the website or the app to watch episode 5 of season 4 of Legends called Wet Hot American Bummer. It originally aired Monday, November 12, 2018. When the Legends discover that kids at a summer camp have disappeared, Sarah, Ava, Ray, and Constantine find themselves as the new camp counselors. It's directed by David Geddes and written by Ray Utanichich and Tyron B. Carter.
Live from the Starling Tribune main news desk on floor 52 of the Starling Tribune Tower, it's the weekly news roundup with chief news anchor Michelle Ely. And now, Michelle Ely.
Thanks, SP. Our first bit of news, it concerns Arrow, but it also features Katie Lutz. Yes, Katie Lutz has been confirmed to return for the Birds of Prey inspired episode. TV Line has confirmed that Legends of Tomorrow star Lutz, whose Sarah finally popped up in an archival documentary interview during Arrow's 150th episode, will return for season 7's 18th episode, which is titled Lost Canary, and has previously been described as a Birds of Prey inspired outing. As Arrow showrunner Beth Schwartz recently revealed to TV Line, quote, we are doing a Birds of Prey inspired episode that Laurel, played by Katie Cassidy, will be involved with, end quote. Schwartz revealed the episode's title earlier this week, along with three different Black Canary figurines. Cassidy Rogers then shared on Instagram a behind-the-scenes photo of her with fellow Canaries Juliana Harkavy and Lutz.
Wow, three Canaries again. That's awesome. And we were talking at the end of season 6 of Arrow why Katie just came in and didn't even have a speaking role. She just came in and looked stunned in the hallway when they told her that her father was no longer with them in the hospital. And then Oliver got arrested. And we were like, huh? So I'm glad they're bringing her back for this. It makes sense. And she does deserve, she, not the actor, but the character was on the pilot episode of Arrow. So it's anytime that she can go back to Arrow legitimately and make it a better episode, it's a better series for it.
I just love how it's all three canaries together. It's going to be good.
Yeah, it should be interesting. You got two heroes and a villain sort of reforming.
You know what would make it even better? If you had Batwoman and Supergirl there too.
Ooh.
It's kind of funny because it's going to be like canary, canary, canary.
Yep, it could be. And I hope they're all in costume too.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Because Sarah doesn't wear her costume all the time. I mean, she's in cosplay all the time on Legends of Tomorrow, but she doesn't wear her canary costume all the time.
And I hope that if she goes back to the canary costume, it's the one with the big trench coat with it, because that was an awesome costume. The one from like season 1, season 2. I love that one.
Probably with a different bust line on it, though.
Probably.
Yeah.
But bring back the trench coat at least, because it was badass.
That works because she's the captain of the time ship, and that was Rip Hunter's thing with the long trench coat. So I like the fact that if she came back as Canary with a long white trench coat, I like that feel for her because she took over as captain from Rip.
Well, that's episode 18. So I'm really looking forward to that one. In general news, Batwoman, Dougray Scott is to star in the pilot. He has been tapped to play the male lead in Batwoman, playing Batwoman's father opposite Ruby Rose in the CW's drama pilot. Jacob Kane, a former military colonel with a chip on his shoulder for Batman, Jacob Kane now commands Gotham. So again, Jacob Kane is Batwoman's father. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it could be neat.
In addition, Marcos Siga has come on board to direct and executive produce. He takes over for David Nutter, who has stepped aside as director for personal reasons, but will remain an executive producer on the pilot.
stuff happens in real life, and it's a shame that they lost David Nutter, but I'm glad that they have Douglas Ray, and I can't wait to see this pilot. I have never been like the biggest Batwoman fan forever and ever and ever, but I had delved into the comics in the last couple of years since Rebirth came out, and I've been enjoying the character. It's like one of my favorite Bat characters, so I'm glad to see this, and I do realize the dynamics involved of Jacob Kane. We were in Gotham for the crossover. We saw how dilapidated Gotham has become, so it's no surprise to me that martial law is basically declared, and Jacob Kane comes in as the commander of the city then. So yeah, I can see all this happening. It's already been set up for us, really, and it's just a matter of pulling the trigger on it.
In our final piece of news, I know we don't talk a lot of movie news, but we did talk about Aquaman on this podcast, so I had to bring this up. Aquaman is officially one of the highest grossing movies ever. With its most recent weekend's box office numbers, Aquaman passed Transformers Dark of the Moon to become the 20th highest grossing film of all time on the worldwide box office list. According to Box Office Mojo, the film currently has a current gross of $1.13 billion. While Aquaman's theatrical run is almost over, there's a remote chance it could pull in another $23 million to grab the 19th spot on that list from Captain America Civil War. Oh my gosh. I mean, this Jason Momoa, let's just hope it's not a joke movie, has made over $1 billion worldwide. I did not see this coming.
Yeah, so domestically, we definitely have to differentiate here. Domestically, Aquaman made $332 million, which makes it the 57th highest grossing movie in the domestic United States. And The Dark Knight as the highest DC comic book movie at number 10 with $535 million. That's just domestic. That is, of course, not what they're looking at. They're looking at the worldwide, and that is awesome to see Aquaman at the 20th or 19th. And just to give you an idea of the type of movies that are in that area, you're talking Captain America Civil War, you're talking The Lord of the Rings, you're talking Frozen, you're talking some Star Wars movies, you're talking Jurassic Park, Toy Story 3, that's all plus or minus 5 or 10, depending on how you look at the list. That is amazing to have it be the 19th or 20th highest grossing movie of all time worldwide.
Well, this is going to be a trend you see more and more, is more emphasis on the foreign box office. By that, I mean we record in North America, so that's foreign to us, domestic being North America, because as we've moved forward in time with movies, they start targeting things a bit more towards China, because if you can get a movie past the censors there, there's a boatload of money to potentially be made if something can catch on. And I wager that's part of Aquaman's success. That's one of the things that hurt Star Wars, for instance, is that screeners in China didn't care so much about Star Wars. So when you go and look at these lists of worldwide box office, as we start to go, we're going to see a lot more of the newer movies there and older movies falling off, because not just the domestic box office is going to come into play for them. You look at, like, The Dark Knight. I think the biggest chunk of its money came domestic versus foreign here with Aquaman, and that's the trend we're going to see.
So Batman versus Superman, which I postulated, if done right, could have been the first $3 billion movie. Now, why did I say that? Because until recently, Batman was the most grossed in terms of making money, the highest grossing single entity in all the comic books. Spider-Man, just recently, a couple of years ago, eclipsed Batman. But Batman's always been big. Superman's always been big. I think if Batman versus Superman was done right, and I think everybody could agree, it had its pluses, it had a lot of minuses, it wasn't done right. They're number 60th on the worldwide list with $873 million. Their domestic take was $330. So very similar to Aquaman domestically, but worldwide, they definitely are a lot further down the list.
Speaking of Batman, we have a couple moments. If you haven't heard, Ben Affleck is no longer Batman. Who do we think should take up the mantle?
There's a rumor that Army Hammer has basically got it. They just haven't signed the contract yet. So I guess we'll wait and see what comes out of that one. I don't have any great theories anymore, though.
Well, my great theory was, and I still think it's a good theory, but I also caveated that theory, was this individual would have to get done with their current project. And this individual is not done with their current project, at least not that I know of. Stephen Amell could have made a decent Batman.
We're going to have to agree to disagree there.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree with me, but Chris, that's fine. That's part of geek culture, right? You can disagree and you can both have fun doing things.
I think it would be tough to do because he's iconic as the Green Arrow, number one. And number two, I don't think they're going to take a chance on a TV actor for Batman. And that sounds more disparaging than I intended to, but there's a lot of folks in the higher ups in movies and movie distribution houses and studios and stuff like that that kind of tend to look at TV as lesser than movie, which is kind of interesting as you've seen more and more folks from movies doing TV shows. So I don't think they're going to go that route. I think it could be interesting, but it's not going to happen.
I would like them to go with sort of a comedic actor again, because that's, and I know that's not how a lot of people view Batman. Batman's dark and dirty and not Batman, you know, gruff and broken and that sort of thing. But I think Michael Keaton brought something to the role that made it more accessible to more people. So I hope that they do something like that. But I don't know. Michelle, who do you think is going to be it?
I don't know, because I'm not too sure if they're going to keep an extended universe going. From what it seems as though they're going to, because of how Aquaman did, do more of, like, I guess, independent movies. Like the new Batman movie may not have anything to do with anything. And I guess the Wonder Woman movies are all their own. It's like the opposite of Marvel. It's more like hashtag is disconnected.
Hashtag we gave up.
Well, I think one thing we need to keep in mind with the Batman casting and how they're going to go is, by all accounts, Matt Reeves' movie is more about the detective aspect of Batman, the investigator, and the brainy side, not necessarily the as dark and tortured. So that could inform how they do their casting, too.
I hope so. I like the DC Comics Detective Batman a lot better than... It's the only series I get of Batman, actually, is Detective Batman. So I like it.
I mean, I'm still banking on the fact they do a Batman Beyond live action movie one day and bring Michael Keaton back as Bruce. That's what I want to see.
He'd do it, too. He'd do it.
Old man Bruce. Oh, I would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can't tell me after seeing Spider-Man Homecoming that Michael Keaton couldn't pull off the cranky old Batman after he did Adrian Toomes.
If they... Okay, postulation time. If they had brought back Michael Keaton instead of casting Ben Affleck as Batman, would the series have been a little bit more successful with him involved? Okay.
It's the script. They decided to go so dark, especially with Superman being really dark in it. They had a chance to course correct Superman in Batman versus Superman, but they decided not to. He was dark. Batman was dark. Cinematography was dark. Everything was dark.
And going back to your point, SP, as to whether it had been Keaton over Affleck, one thing to consider is right now, Michael Keaton's 67 years old. So he'd have been, what, about 62 when they were filming that?
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many people would buy 62-year-old Batman unless you were doing like a direct adaptation of Frank Miller's work, which this was loosely inspired by, but not inspired enough for someone to be like, oh yeah, I'm going to buy this 60-year-old Batman when we have a brand new Superman on the scene.
Well, that, yeah, okay. That's the feel that I assumed that they were going for, but, you know, okay. Yeah, Michael Keaton doesn't have to come back and play Batman. I'm fine with him never coming back and doing the role, but I think because he's so beloved as that 89 Batman, that he could come back and he could bring something back into the role and reinvigorate the series a little bit, but it doesn't have to be Michael Keaton. It just has to be done right. And I hope they don't give it up completely, their joint Justice League universe that they've tried to build, because they do have some pieces to it that work very well. They have Wonder Woman and Aquaman, who both work very well. I think Henry Cavill was doing a decent job as Superman. Chris, I know you probably disagree with that.
Oh, Cavill was awesome. He was the best part of Justice League.
Yeah. So we don't have him anymore. He's quit the role, but I think that they could do something with that. I don't know, guys, about The Flash. Are they still doing that movie? I hear yes and no all the time.
Supposedly they are. I don't know where they're going with it.
I've heard crickets. It's like the Gambit movie on the Marvel side. They talk about it, but nothing's happened.
They finally got the fans' feelings of, what are you doing to us? You're giving us this decent connected universe over in the CW on the TV side. Marvel does it. Everything's connected on Marvel's side. Why are you giving us another Flash for the movies? I don't understand. Why are you doing this to us? And I think they finally got that is not the best move. And I don't know if they're going to go through with it or not, because I know they have Ezra, who has been cast, and we've seen him on screen, and we have Grant Gustin, and we've seen him on screen. I don't know. I think they're two different people, but I don't know. I think Flash is okay to have two different people. I don't know, guys. I get lost in this argument in my own mind all the time, but I think DC could actually pull it off, and it's like they don't want to. It's like they just want to make a few bucks every once in a while, and they don't want to give the fans a love letter to create mega new fans. I guarantee you the MCU has created a lot of great new Marvel fans, and DC has not done that. DC is, okay, I go and watch a movie, that's great, I'll watch the next one, and that's it. The Marvel stuff has created people that will actually go invest themselves, learn about the characters, buy comics digitally or the actual physical copies. I don't think DC's got that going on.
That's fair. I think you're probably right. The MCU has worked differently and brought people in, and the stutters to the DC universe probably haven't helped it. But before we transition off this, two names for Batman I think would be interesting. I did some quick Googling. I went, ooh, these are two that stand out. I think they won't go this route because he's probably considered too old for the younger route they've been seeming to want to go. But John Hamm, I think he could be a pretty good Batman.
Okay.
Possibly, yeah.
And then the one that I really like, and I have to credit them over at superherohype.com because that's where I found him on the list, Oscar Isaac as Batman. I would watch the hell out of that.
Ooh, sexy.
Let's be honest, though. He's got the acting chops to do it. The man is a phenomenal actor, and you know he would engross himself in the role.
Yeah, so I've been thinking about Star Wars, and he comes up all the time when I think in terms of Batman, and he does have that comedic nature to him. So I think he would work in my vision of Batman, at least, not to say that I have anything to do with the selection. Oscar Isaac, by the way, has been improving his voice acting chops with the current Star Wars animated series. And his character has a reoccurring role over there. And whenever he comes on, it's definitely a different version of his character than you see in the movies, but you're seeing him in a different time. It's a different side of his character, and I just see more of him. And yeah, he's great. And I think based on that, based on his levity and his seriousness and his ability to embrace the action, I think, yeah, he would be good at it.
And he's only 39 years old. So you still get a slightly older Batman, but plenty of time he could wear the suit for. I think it would be great. And I was pulled up his IMDb to see what projects he had coming up. Episode 9, Star Wars, is in post-production right now, so his commitments would be done there. He's in the Adams Family as Gomez Adams, which I didn't realize, which is going to be awesome. And that's in post-production. And the only movie he has in pre-production right now is Dune.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, we've never really seen Dune movies be successful. So I'm not sure if that's going to turn into a franchise or not. So theoretically, he could have room in his schedule if they went that route for him to be Bruce Wayne.
There's a lot of big names attached to that Dune movie. Jason Momoa, Josh Brolin, Dave Bautista, Skarsgård. There's a lot of great names attached to that Dune. I wouldn't be surprised if it was actually good. I'm hoping.
I mean, they've tried enough times. They got it nailed at some point. We're still over a year away.
There's no Sting, so I'll still give it a shot, even though there's no Sting.
Yeah, SP's right. The cast is phenomenal on that. Rebecca Ferguson's in it, and she's awesome in the Mission Impossible movie, so she could do some really cool physical scenes. Zendaya's in it. Javier Bardem, Stellan Skarsgård, on top of all the actors you mentioned. There's some real star power in that one, so if they can pull it off, and they've got these people locked down, this could end up being a good franchise. Now, we'll see what happens. Who knows? I'm not going to wish Dune poorly so that we get Oscar Isaac as Batman, but I'd love to see Oscar Isaac as Batman is what it comes down to.
I think he could do both, though. Didn't Harrison Ford do... he was doing Indiana Jones and Star Wars at the same time.
True. I guess it depends on how they're going to film any sequels if it happens. If they do like the Infinity War approach, where they go, we're going to film both movies at the same time, I imagine that's a bit tougher.
Yeah.
If you're doing two tentpole franchises.
It just takes you out of the production scheduling for another... It's really only another couple of months, right? Because the filming on any of these movies is about, what, 120 to 180 days? So you're just taken out of the scheduling for that much longer.
Yeah, that's fair. We'll have to wait and see what happens. Now, man, I want to see Oscar Isaac as Batman. That's stuck in my head.
Yeah, it is.
Damn it.
Well, we are not the only ones who talk about Marvel and DC and Aquaman. We are part of a larger podcasting network. And Chris, what is one of the shows that we have?
One of the shows we have, we're going to talk about, is called PopXCast. This week, it's episode 89. It's their Marvel Netflix discussion, specifically about Punisher Season 2. And then they talk about their review of Aquaman. Recovering from the holiday break, PopX makes its return in 2019 with a very hot topic concerning Marvel's departure from Netflix and the future of our beloved superheroes from the streaming platform. They offer insight into the future of Marvel's streaming sagas, as well as a season 2 review of The Punisher, and finally, a film review of Aquaman. All that and more in episode 89 of PopXCast, which you can find by heading on over to GunnaGeek.com and clicking on the network button. You'll find PopXCast in addition to the 20-plus other shows that are on the network. That being said, though, it is time for us to start wrapping this thing up. So a big thank you to everyone who did participate in the chat room over at Geeks.live, where we live stream the video version of this show. But also a thank you to everyone who downloads the audio podcast from StarlingTribune.com or catches the video replay over on YouTube.com/GunnaGeek.
Remember, if you happen to have an Amazon device, you can always enable our podcast as a skill. We now also have a Discord server, which you can come on in and join our chats in the Starling Tribune channel. You can find that at GunnaGeek.com/Discord. And remember, you can always catch us live as we record at www.geeks.live at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific on all Thursdays.
We would love to hear from you. We're the Starling Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starling Tribune on Twitter, and you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, this brings us to the end of another great episode. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag Adam Corgi.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag Oscar Isaac for Batman.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with hashtag Pub Fight. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.